Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, November 12th, and I'm your host and the editor of Rabble.ca, Chelsea Nash. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble has its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you, and every Friday, we break it down for you, no matter where or how you're listening. It's a good way to catch up on the news of the week, and, as with all Rabble news, look at current events through a progressive lens. This week on the show, Hamilton local Wayne McPhail interviews Rabble contributor and fellow Hamilton area local Doreen Nichol about what she says is the threat of urban sprawl in Hamilton, Ontario. This is a local issue, but Doreen says it has national implications. On November 9th, Hamilton City Council held a meeting to discuss whether or not to expand its urban boundary onto the surrounding farmland. The final vote will take place November 19th. The farmland in question is squished between the current urban boundary and the green belt. It's actually known as the white belt and is not protected farmland. There are a number of factors at play here in addition to the erasure of prime farmland, including the lack of affordable housing in the city and, as with anything else, the climate crisis. You can listen to their conversation in just a moment. After that, I'll take you through a recap of everything you might have missed this week on Rabble.ca, from our Remembrance Day coverage to analysis of Quebec's municipal elections, which saw a progressive movement surge ahead. For now, here's Wayne and Doreen.
Hey, Doreen, thanks for coming on the show. Your piece was about how Hamilton City Council specifically, and citizens are wrestling with urban boundary expansion. And you talked about how the decision was about how people can live, eat, and thrive in Hamilton. And also you touched on the climate crisis in relation to urban boundary expansion. So before we get into that, I thought it would be worthwhile for folks who don't know Hamilton, sort of setting up the political climate and the geographical location. In Hamilton, we have a divisive council, so with a number of old school, old boy councillors in opposition to a fresh crop led by two dynamic women. And now long-term councillor Chad Collins, who was elected Liberal MP for Hamilton East Stony Creek, is in the last election, is going to be replaced right before this vote because that vote's been delayed. And we have developers who lots of folks feel have too much power and have bullied staff and councillors over the years, many of whom they've supported with campaign donations. And we have groups like Stop the Sprawl, which we'll talk about, I hope, and I Elect Hamilton, which are grassroots organizations calling for a change in thinking and actually a change in council in next year's municipal election. And geographically, right at the westernmost tip of Lake Ontario, we have an escarpment that separates the city from sort of lower city, the upper city, called the Mountain here. And beyond the escarpment to the south, there's a lot of development, obviously, but also farmland, right? So why does that sort of factor into the discussion about urban boundary expansion in Hamilton, Ontario?
I hate to see any farmland being paved over. I live in Burlington, and we've paved over most of our farmland. I actually sat on a committee with a farmer from Hamilton, and his was a teaching farm. It was organic. He delivered the groceries by bike as much as he could, and he employed people on the farm as well as teaching others how to farm. His farm is in that parcel of land that's going to be paved over. Anybody that was listening to delegations may have heard some of the developers saying the land is not good. That's not a good enough reason to pave over it. If it's not good, let Mike in and he'll show you how to bring it back to life with organic farming. So I'm concerned about our food security because people in Burlington bought from that farm. So it's bigger than Hamilton.
I grew up in Burlington, and I remember on Maple Avenue, I worked on a farm that is now Maple View Mall there. And so it's very close to home, literally close to home. So let's sort of frame up exactly what we're talking about in terms of numbers for urban boundary expansion in Hamilton, because the province wants the city to expand, grab 1,310 hectares of farmland over the next 30 years, right? And that's because the province wants the or expects the city to expand by 236,000 people to a population of 820,000 by 2015. So that's a 60% intensification. And that's the projection of the province. Some people argue with that, but that's what we're talking about, right? That we're talking about a massive expansion to the south of a urban area, right?
But one of the groups in Hamilton put together a wonderful map, and Zoe Green, I'm going to mention her name, she helped put the map together. And they highlighted all the spaces within the city itself right now that are sitting unused, that could be used for housing that perhaps doesn't go above the tree line, like 4, 5, 6-story apartments, duplexes, townhouses, all of that in there. And it could be a variety of incomes that are the houses are geared to as well. And that could take care of all of those people.
And I want to come back to the discussion of the kinds of options that Hamiltonians have and kinds of options Canadians have across, I mean, when they're wrestling with these kinds of issues. But I wanted to talk about that map specifically, because what's interesting about the map you referenced in your piece that Zoe Green points to is it was a crowdsourced map developed by volunteers all across Hamilton who came together and were boots on the ground looking for options in terms of parking lots or lots that hadn't been developed or developments that were supposed to happen and didn't happen. And the map they created, if you look at that map, it looks like Jackson Pollock went nuts with yellow paint, right? Like yeah. they're sort of those lands are called yellow belt lands as opposed to green belt or white belt. White belt is the lands or that are on the edge of the city that aren't in the green belt being protected lands, hopefully protected lands in the future. Yellow belt are areas that are ready for development if the legislation was changing, municipal bylaws were changed so that those could be developed, or if people were thoughtful about what developed in them. So that map is really fascinating because it shows just how much yellow there is in Hamilton, right?
There really is. I drive into Hamilton through York Street. So I drive right by an elementary school that closed. I think it might be John A. McDonald.
Yeah, it was Sir John A. McDonald.
Yeah, for 2 years, it's been sitting empty. Perfect space to build some housing. Very close to Hess Street School, I believe, too, isn't it?
Yes,
not too far.
It's not too far away. And we're talking about sort of the need in terms of what the province is mandating. And this is an important point to make, I think, that a lot of this pressure for the expansion is coming from the province of they're really pushing densities, and they need to get 110,000 more households in the Hamilton area. That's the pressure that's being pressed on the municipality to deal with. So given that pressure, let's talk a little bit about the players, because there are we had a couple of days ago representations, 80 presentations for a 12-hour meeting for a general issues committee of Hamilton City Hall that went on and was supposed to have been, this issue was supposed to have been decided 2 days ago, as your piece pointed out, and it got delayed. We're now looking at a November 19th date for the decision to be made. But there were tons of presentations. What was interesting to me are most of the presentations that were in favor of the boundary expansion came from folks who had a vested interest in that boundary expansion. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes. When I was watching it, most of the expansion was coming from developers who have probably speculated out in that area. But that's what they did. They speculated. You don't always get what you want. There was one woman who was from Helping Hands. I'm not familiar with that nonprofit, but I understand they help low-income people.
Yes.
And she wanted the boundary pushed so there would be housing for her clients. There's not going to be housing for her clients up there. They won't be able to afford it on old age pension. She mentioned ODSP, Ontario Works. They won't be able to afford it. And even if they did, there's no transit to get them to the city where all the things they need are, including her nonprofit. So it didn't make sense to me what she was arguing. They would be completely removed from everything. Backyard seemed to be a big thing with her and some of the builders as well, that everybody needs backyard. Hamilton is so filled with green spaces, Gage Park, Gore Park, 100 or so waterfalls. That's your backyard. Let's not pave over it. Let's not pave over the farmland. That's also your backyard. Take, if she is able to, she should take her kids up to the farms.
One of the groups that you mentioned, the developers, there was 9 developer groups that came together to create a group called the Hamilton Needs Housing Group, right? And they sent out a questionnaire or a survey that I think a lot of people agree was extremely biased towards the development point of view. And they were really pushing the idea that no boundary expansion was an extreme position. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. I wouldn't even say that all the people moving to Hamilton are going to be moving into those homes. You're going to get people from Burlington, Oakville, Mississauga, Toronto, who see those as less expensive than homes in their areas. So that's not necessarily going to house people from Hamilton. So no, I disagree. DeSani is actually building homes on the last piece of land in my area on Walker's Line. They're starting at 1.1 million. The people moving to Hamilton or first-time buyers, they're not going to be buying those homes that they want to put on the farmland in Hamilton.
Right. And that was one of the things that some of the counselors pointed out, that the market value for homes is just going up. And there's just no indication that what's being built on the expanded land into farmland is going to be affordable at all.
That's right. And I'm not sure I mentioned, but those are townhouses starting at 1.1 million. They're not even a detached house.
So let's talk a little bit about the options, because there were a number of groups, particularly Stop the Sprawl was a group that came together, and that came together in Hamilton, I don't know, it feels like about 6 months ago I started seeing signs around town for them. And that was a group, and the head of the group said that it was sort of this weird coalition of small activist groups that focused themselves around this issue and were very, very proactive and very vocal and very organized around opposition to the developers, opposition to urban boundary expansion. Can you talk a little bit about that group?
I actually met Michelle, who works with that group, through another piece I did about the 413. She and a group of multiple people from Guelph, Burlington, Hamilton, showed up at a breakfast that Doug Ford was giving a couple of weeks ago in Caledon, the next place that they're going to expand in, the province wants to expand. So I happened upon Stop Sprawl by accident. Man, they're organized, they move quickly, and it's people from a cross-section of people that didn't want the sprawl. It's not one group with a vested interest. There's all sorts of people, different age groups. And I think we need to discuss the climate piece as well, because they do as well. We need to be using a climate lens when we're making these decisions, because once we pave over the farmland, we can't get it back. It's gone.
So I think Hamilton's losing a lot of farmland every day, right? I mean, the expansion is happening now even.
Yes. And across the province of Ontario, we're losing about 175 acres a day of farmland.
Amazing. Now, one of the other people that spoke when this came before the General Issues Committee 2 days ago now as we record this was a woman who's a planner and author named Cheryl Case. And she was discussing the role of what's called, and it's become very popular lately, the idea of the missing middle. And what she means by that is options for housing people that don't require expansion and don't require tall towers in downtown or in other municipal areas, right? And so she was really talking about things like duplexes, stacked triplexes, live-work buildings and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about the options that groups like Save the Sprawl and Cheryl Case are talking about when you're talking about housing people within the existing boundaries of a municipality like Hamilton?
Many, many years ago at Ryerson, or I guess it's University X right now, I took a housing course. And I really remember, don't build above the tree lines, or you don't get to know your neighbors. You're not part of a community. So I really don't want to see tall towers. If we're going to build, don't go higher than 4 to 6 stories. But in Hamilton, I like the laneway houses. You guys have so many nice laneways behind your homes. And a few years ago, I think the first laneway house went in, and it's a beautiful design, and it fit right in the space. And it was, I think, designed for the parents of the people who lived in the main home. It was a wonderful idea. I think that's a great way to use that space. duplex, or like in Montreal, the way they build their homes, where it's, you have the bottom two floors and someone else has top two floors, that they've been using that to infill as well. So we could use that idea here in Hamilton.
Right. So let's go back to the laneway house, because some people may not be familiar with what a laneway house is. Can you describe that a bit?
So this was placed at the back of the house in Hamilton. A lot of the homes have laneways behind them, and that's where the garages are. And you can either use the garage and add on to it, or take the garage down and put up a small home that fits into that space. And the idea is it would have its own garden, and it's self-contained. It has everything it needs. One story is the one that I saw. So it fit in nicely in the neighborhood, and it didn't interfere with anyone's sight lines or the sun getting into other neighbors. So it was really nicely placed. And then you come and go through the laneway.
Now, something that Bill Curran, who's an architect in Hamilton, pointed out is that, and he's against the boundary expansion, I believe, but he pointed out that, yes, it's a great idea to deal with the expanding population, but not the expansion of the boundary, with the kind of housing that we talked about, the laneway housing, the duplexes and stuff, but that the problem is in many of the areas in Hamilton, the sort of yellow belt areas we talked about earlier, the municipal bylaws don't provide for that kind of housing. They prevent people from being able to do that. Is that something that you think should be changing within Hamilton and within other municipalities?
Absolutely. Yes. And it's something they can do, clearly, because Doug Ford's doing it all the time. So the municipalities could do it. Just change the way you designate areas. The building code, whatever they need to change. Yes, absolutely. They should be doing that.
So let's come back to what you raised earlier, the idea of climate and the impact on the environment of urban expansion. Can you talk a little bit about why that's important for Hamilton and why that's important for municipalities across Canada?
Well, anybody who has kids will know that there's a lot of stress. Doesn't matter what age your kids are. Today's my daughter's birthday. She's turning 28. She's concerned about climate change too. It's just always been there. When I had my kids, we bought from a community supported agricultural venture, and he was organic. So we only ate in season to lower our footprint. So municipalities need to start thinking about this. The border could be closed at any time. We can't count on getting our fruits and vegetables and meats from the U.S. We should be supplying our own. And farmers sequester, if they're doing it right, sequester carbon as they're growing their produce. So everything we should do, we should be seeing how it's going to impact the environment, how it's going to impact climate. And we just can't keep growing and expanding. It just can't keep happening.
So one of the people that has weighed in on this is Sandy Shaw, who's the NDP MPP for Hamilton West, Ancaster, and Dundas. And she's sort of saying, you know, that the city has enough time to consider this, that there might be a change in government when there's an election, which is coming up in June of 2022. Do you think that is something that is a reasonable view, that we should maybe just work at a provincial level to change the government to deal with this?
That would help, even in the next municipal election, if the vote doesn't go the way people would like it. Because what I was also hearing at the council meeting was that maybe we should just put this through because Doug Ford will do it anyway. Well, that's not the attitude council should be taking. They should be stopping the urban boundary. If Ford changes it, then we have to rise up and tell them we're not going to take it. And you can let them know in the next election you're not happy with him pushing his agenda through.
We said at the beginning that this decision was supposed to have been made 2 days ago as we record this, and we're recording this on Remembrance Day. It's now been pushed to the 19th. Have you got any sense of what activist groups like Stop the Sprawl are going to be doing between now and then in order to try to sway the councillors who would be voting for this? And many of those are sort of old school councillors, councillors that have been around for a long time. Do you know what the plans are in terms of activism between now and the vote date on 19th, if it happens on the 19th?
I honestly don't, but I do know that they're very concerned about the appointment of a councillor tomorrow. One of the councillors left. He became an MP. His seat's been vacant. So even though they had a quorum the other night, could have voted, it's a concern that they're waiting till after this person's appointed tomorrow, because the feeling is they could appoint someone who's going to vote for the sprawl.
Yeah, it's a very interesting time on council right now, because as you said, you know, we have a member who's moved on and is being replaced. So it's going to be a challenge in and of itself to deal with that issue. So thank you very much for spending some time with me today to discuss this. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. And thank you for bringing this to the attention of folks across Canada, because it's going to affect them in their own ways as well, right?
It will. And just keep in mind, the 22nd is National Housing Day. So it's the day we want to end homelessness and make housing affordable. So Hamilton City Council needs to keep that in mind.
Yeah, as they make a decision, they're going to impact those people directly. Right. Well, thank you very much, Doreen. I appreciated the time and I appreciate talking to you.
You're welcome.
That was Wayne McPhail and Doreen Nickel. You can read Doreen's article from this week at rabble.ca, of course. She regularly contributes to our coverage of local issues, arts and culture, and sometimes even delves into foreign affairs coverage. She's got a bit of a following in Ethiopia, in fact. You can find her on Twitter at Doreen Nickel 61. That's DoreenNicoll 61. Now it's time for In Case You Missed It. Here's what you missed this week at rabble.ca. Unless, of course, this is just a recap for you because you've been on the site all week paying close attention. Yesterday was November 11th, and that, of course, is Remembrance Day. Here at Rabble, we featured some coverage that is definitely worth reading beyond just one day. Our own national politics reporter, Stephen Wenzel, wrote about the military's discriminatory history against queer folks, urging us to think about our veterans as having had intersectional identities and complex relationships, not only with their fellow service members, but also with the governments they served and the enemies they fought. Also on the site this week, Ottawa writer Morgan Duchesny delves into how it's most often the working class that ends up going to war and the upper classes that end up in politics. Our veterans, especially our wounded ones, deserve better. Quote, "Poppies remind me that wars are fought by working people who are often discarded when their courage is no longer required," writes Duchesny. Finally, Daryl Rankin wrote about the importance of remembering the MacPaps. That's the nickname for the Mackenzie Papineau Battalion, which in 1937 through 1939 fought fascism in Spain for the International Brigades, an effort closely associated with the Communist Party. Those volunteers went to join the fight in Spain illegally, against the wishes of then Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King. When they returned, they found themselves ostracized. Many faced discrimination and lost their jobs. All were denied official recognition as veterans, meaning there were no health benefits or military pensions available to them, which is why Rankin is arguing that we pay a special remembrance to this group of fighters. Also on the site this week, Carl Nirenberg looks at the results from the municipal elections throughout Quebec, which concluded this past Sunday, November 7th, and sees hope for progressives across the country. A record number of young people and women were elected, and 5 of the 10 largest Quebec cities are now led by women, he notes. Nirenberg sees the reinstallment of Valérie Plante as mayor of Montreal as a victory not just for her, but for her party, Projet Montréal, and the progressive grassroots movement it spawned from. Politics in our time can be excruciatingly transactional, writes Nirenberg, especially at the local level. Municipal leaders often focus intently on satisfying the narrow interests of powerful groups, particularly developers. We're seeing that take place in the last few years and currently in cities like Ottawa and Toronto, which are textbook examples of that approach, writes Nirenberg. Perhaps they should be taking notes. Columnist Rachel Snow spilled some ink on the site this week as she examined the settler colonial concept of progress and its detrimental relationship with First Nations. Are First Nations moving forward, she wonders? If Canadians want the truth, Snow writes, they will have to understand that the way forward for First Nations people must come from the actual voices of all the First Nation people. We are still waiting to talk, writes Snow. Finally, Brent Patterson writes about the need for the federal government to consider the emissions of the fighter jets it is working to acquire before it signs any contracts. This especially in the wake of calls at COP26 for military emissions to be included when countries are discussing CO2 targets. As it stands, all the fuel they burn running jets, tanks, and the like just doesn't exist, I guess, as far as many nations' CO2 emissions measurements go. As always, you can read more about all of those topics and much, much more at rabble.ca. That's it for this week. We'll see you around the site, I'm sure. If you like the show, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcasts. Rate, review, share it with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble, but it means the world to us. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA, RABBLECA. And if you have feedback for the show, I'm all ears. You can get in touch with me at editor@rabble.ca. That's editor@rabble.ca. I can't promise I'll respond to each and every message, but I do read everything that comes in, and I love to hear from our listeners. I'm your host, Chelsea Nash. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk next week. Thanks to our producer, Brianne Doyle, Wayne McPhail, and guest, Doreen Nickel. Thanks to Carl Nurnberg for the music and all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca.